Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. It is Thursday, the 30th of July, for those of you keeping score at home. And it's very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we will also invite you to be a part of our program, as we always do, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We have a great panel this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning to you and to everyone else out there in Radio Land.
It is Radio Land.
It is what it is.
And Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain has been helping us out, and as he always does, and we are ever grateful that he is here this Thursday morning.
More than grateful. We love him.
Oh, well, I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
We're a very special man.
And speaking of special guest and special man, Stu Shinsky is here, interim publisher of the Poughkeepsie Journal.
You are too kind. Thank you, gentlemen. Great to see you, as always.
Very nice to have you with us. So you remember that problem I've been having all week, Alan?
Yes.
Do you have your thing with you?
Oh, yeah. I have this. I have that. I have just about everything. Bippity, boppity, boo. Okay, here's this. Does that help you or not?
I think that does help me, actually.
Or do you want this? I could give it up. Okay, so what Joe is talking about, just in case anybody at home doesn't know, is that sometime we have computer dropouts, and he is making sure that he can get what he needs. So did you get what you need?
No, but that's all right. All of my issue is on the internet. I can't get access to the internet for whatever reason, but maybe someone can help me with that.
Maybe we can get our cracked engineer down here to help us.
Help!
What was the first story on the list?
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. Yes. Yeah. So we have had
Cincinnati police officer pulled over a motorist, shot the man. The man was unarmed. The police officer has been indicted on murder charges.
Yesterday, they released the body cam video. Yes. We've been talking a lot about body cams, and that is ultimately what the video we saw. It was an edited video, I believe. At least the one I saw was
edited. Did not
edited.
Seem to be.
Right. Seemed to be the entire video, yeah.
Oh, okay. The one I saw was edited from the time of the actual shooting.
No, I saw a version where it's literally the police car following the motorist. So there's a fuller version out there.
Okay. And so what do we make of this, of ultimately this?
Well, it's another situation arrest. Where a unarmed civilian is dead and a police officer, this particular police officer was for the University of Cincinnati, a police officer, and they have shared jurisdiction in the area around the college campus along with the City of Cincinnati Police. He was a 25-year-old officer, and he pulled over a gentleman who was driving with a missing license plate.
Yes.
And then there was an exchange. It ended in a shots being fired, and the driver of the car died. Another officer responded, and this particular first officer said he was dragging me. I had to do that, but then the body cam video reveals something else, a very different version, and it's a chilling thing
that
to watch.
That he was not being dragged at all.
Well, here's the problem. The problem always is that juries, and all you need for not guilty is one person sitting on a jury, right? This is not a civil trial. It isn't the majority. All you need is one person who thinks that policemen have a rough job and that they are always to be presumed not guilty. So if the guy says, if the cop says, I'm afraid that I was going to be pulled away, somebody's going to say that's reasonable. I think it's terrific. Really terrific that the district attorney and the grand jury came up with an indictment, which is in itself very unusual.
It's rare.
But I think what has been learned out of our experiences this year is you can't brush it under the rug anymore.
No.
Now you have to take it seriously. And if you're in a city with a significant minority population, you really better watch what you're doing, because if you don't do the right thing, you got a potential riot on your hands. So at least do the right thing. Now, don't do the wrong thing because you might have a riot on your hands, but do the right thing at least, and now there'll be a trial, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and the district attorney was very vociferous in talking about the police officer's actions, basically saying this was
asinine. Yes.
Yeah, this was very clear-cut, like, we're prosecuting this. This was not a question of opinion or anything.
Sure.
We're going after this.
Sure.
And he says this officer never should have been a police officer, and, I mean, they didn't charge him with homicide. They charged him with murder. This reminds me of the situation in North Charleston, South Carolina, where the officer shot at a guy who was running away from a traffic stop, an unarmed man, and the man was killed by the officer. And then he told a version of it that you know, he was confronted and it was an act of defense to do that. And then the video later showed it otherwise. And in that case, the officer was also charged with murder. But what it raises is a very uncomfortable question. When you have a situation where an unarmed minority individual is in a confrontation with a police officer and the minority individual ends up getting shot or killed by the officer, and you don't have video, you know, it's just very uncomfortable to think about we're only relying on one version, where in these particular high-profile cases, the officers' versions were far different than what the video showed.
Yes. Also, the escalation was so quick. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was as if a switch was thrown.
Yeah. The cop asked multiple times, "Do you have your license? I need to see your driver's license." And then the guy started to start the car, and apparently in an attempt to drive away, and that's when this blew up. But you know, the issue here is the video. And we're seeing more and more the infiltration, and in a good way, the infiltration of technology into the resolution of these issues. I think it's fair to say that maybe it's time that every police officer has a body camera,
absolutely,
which is the case in this example. And maybe it's time that every police car has not just a dashboard camera, but multiple cameras. The technology is there. It can be done fairly inexpensively, but there has to be some sort of independent way to account for these situations. And it seems that video could provide that.
I mean, to your point and to Mike's point, in the Eric Garner case, the Wall Street Journal first reported that he died of a heart attack in police custody. And if the video hadn't emerged, we wouldn't have known.
Exactly right.
You wouldn't have known. And so I don't know. What do we lose in that? And I guess obviously there's a whole host of things.
Well, it's also what
we lose.
It's also what we gain.
But that's
it could
right.
protect
what
the
do we
police
gain?
Officer as well as protect the potential suspect. It should work equally on both sides.
Mm, and then there's the question of weaponry also. I mean, if you have a gun. And, you know, you've been trained to use it and you want to use it and you're so predisposed. If you didn't have a gun, that guy wouldn't have been shot. Now, I know I'm not arguing that police officers should be unarmed, but it is that a temptation when you have a gun to use it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there it goes back to training, though, and identifying people who have maybe character or psychic anomalies that make them unfit to be police officers, better screening for the candidates, and consistent training, not just training when they're a candidate to be a police officer, but continued professional training, so that you don't have situations where people who have weapons shouldn't have them.
Well, I'm sorry, Joe, really quickly, but Bob sends in and says, why in the world do campus police need to carry guns? This is something that plays out on virtually every campus, because eventually they're going to ask to carry guns. And if one thing has happened in the last 10 years, they're going to say, that's why we need a gun.
Well, and I don't know what the case is in this particular state, but I know that many campuses in New York State, they are an arm. The campus police are an arm of the state police. Is that correct? When I see the vehicles on campus, even over on the nanotech campuses, the New York State Police.
That's a recent development here at the University of Albany and at the related SUNY Polytechnic. Mm. It's not. I don't believe it's universal, but I could.
It's not in the Hudson Valley where we have several private colleges. It's the college's own security force.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to bring up was that Alan had a really interesting discussion on Tuesday on Vox Pop about policing and a guest, an expert guest on it, talking about it. But the issue that came up that we've been skirting around is Mike brought up training, but this idea of, which I thought was a fascinating conversation, of this mentality we have of training to shoot to kill.
Yeah, as it was, somebody always calls up and says, why don't they shoot him in the leg?
Right.
And they say, well, that, and our police expert said, no. If you're going to shoot, you're told to shoot to the main part of the body. And it's not so easy. I just can't forget the Lone Ranger always shooting the gun right out of their hands, and nobody ever died.
That's a myth, really, that police officers have the time and the ability to do that. And
they're not the Lone Ranger.
They're reacting.
Yeah. Well, he was. Yeah. And yeah, there's a police officer. He was the Lone Ranger.
He was that.
That was different.
Yeah, he was own ranking.
He was the last of the Rangers.
But there were there were no flashing lights on that horse, from what I remember.
Body cams on poor
Tonto. Let me have the video, Tonto.
We'll take a break. We'll be back and get your letters and continue our conversation. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this.
Support comes from Barrington Stage Company, Pittsfield, Massachusetts, presenting His Girl Friday, adapted by playwright John Guare, a screwball comedy playing August 6th through the 30th on the Boyd Quinson main stage, barringtonstageco.org. Pioneer Post and Beam, designing and erecting customized timber frame barns, artist studios, sheds, carriage houses, and garages. A non-kit post and beam builder serving the Pioneer Valley, Berkshires, and New England. PioneerPostAndBeam.com. Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world, wine tasting Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. And Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche, qfcc.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. We've been discussing the case of the University of Cincinnati officer indicted in the shooting death of a unarmed black man, and we have several letters on this. We'll go to those letters, and we'll move on to other topics before we go over to BBC News at the bottom of the hour.
Okay, so Stephen said, if I were a black male in this country, I'd wear a body cam to protect myself for when I'm inevitably stopped by a cop. And that's from Steve. And one of my students told me the other day, you should definitely always have a cam in your car. And they sell them now so that everything that happens is recorded. And that's an interesting point, Stephen. Okay. And Mark says, good morning. The sad truth is without video, the majority of people would have given in to stereotypes. No one likes to think that they sometimes have prejudicial thoughts. But what would public opinion have been if there was no video? Good point. And Michael says, imagine how much of this horrible abuse by police occurred pre-video, and it's never a white person as a victim. Such proof of racism by these ignorant men. Michael, for whatever it's worth, let me just say there have been incidents where white people have claimed abuse by
improperly
police,
arrested, wrongful convictions,
by police officers. You know, I always tell my students, never use the word never in a story.
Because
there's always, an exception. And Matt says, the body cams, these are really not cheap. There's a big technical hurdle here with the sheer amount of storage required and the special software to blur faces and whatnot. As I understand it, this footage is subject to release under Freedom of Information requests.
That's not always the case.
No. Right. No. Well, the point is we spend a lot of money on our police. Yeah. So is this a part of what we spend? Should this be a part, no matter what the cost, when we're talking about dead bodies and other people?
And some people have said, well, okay, if the police are going to control the video, are they going to release the full video if it's not in their interest? But we'll have to see. And, you know, just for the record, of course, there are many wonderful, courageous, brave, good cops, most police officers who do the right thing. So we don't want to neglect that fact.
We heard from David who says that we heard from Mike who said he loved this morning's intro music. We get a lot of letters about our intro music. Mm-hmm. I just thought I'd mention that. And our wonderful Dave Hopper answered and said, today's music buttons for the panel from 480s East's album Positraction. Thanks for listening. Okay, and let's see. Irene says, USA has more police problems than any other nation. You see what I mean? Our citizens have been at risk for over a century. Whether it's state, city, FBI, there's been trouble. It's not getting better, the problem, and New York City corrections get shortchanged as the problem solving. Would you say, Irene, that you say more problems than any other nation? Would you say more than Russia? Would you say more than China? Would you say more than
Korea's?
Yeah, I mean, maybe not. Okay, so Tom says, good morning, Roundtable. I like the district attorney's reaction. Finally, someone is brave enough to tell and see the truth. And Bonnie says, dear panel, in Google Map at Rice Street and Valencia Street, Mount Auburn, Cincinnati, Ohio, drop a pin and then walk around that neighborhood where Sam DeBose was killed by that cop. Literally one street short of Justice Street. Irony or message to us all. And I think, Joseph, that's it, unless you have something else.
That is all I see here. And I guess, you know, we've discussed this, we've talked about it in the letters, that this is becoming all too frequent. Is there a point, do you think, that this is going to... is going to happen with even more regularity and we're not going to be talking about it?
No, I think the more it happens, the more the momentum builds up and the more somebody has to do something about it.
Yeah, there is an issue here of there seems just to be in the last few years more police shootings of minorities. And is it we're giving them more attention? Is it that they're communicated more easily because of social media's prevalence? But it just seems it's come out of nowhere in the last few years.
Well, I think we're hearing about it a lot more. In this case in Ohio, the DA said they've investigated 100 cases of police shootings, and this is the only one that has turned out this way. So, I mean, it's fairly common, but now when there's questions being raised, social media, videos that are now available, and the intense interest of citizens and the media to these stories is kept it in the on the front burner.
Yeah, and folks should go watch that video. That's readily available on the internet.
It is disturbing, you know, having
watch
a little warning up there.
Yeah, watch the video.
Yeah. Well, you take a look at some of the southern states and you see the lynchings and you see the terrible things that have occurred, you know,
historically
in America's past and who the cops are in those towns and what's gone on. It's really quite terrible.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back and discuss many other topics. We welcome your thoughts, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be right back. 9:33 on a Thursday morning, and we are knee-deep into our roundtable panel for this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Stu Shinsky, I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org. We do have many letters. We'll get to those, and then we'll move on to other topics.
Okay, says Rachel, what is the feedback from people who are minorities and police officers? When assessing these situations, they identify as black, Hispanic, etc., or cops, both or neither. And Joseph says, as reported last week on your radio station, you mean our radio station, the police in USA kill 5,000 people each year, most with firearms. If the recent news is a barometer, one might conclude that most are unarmed. All right. And And John says, I disagree with Alan's statement that eventually something will be done about the spate of police violence. I think the situation will go the way of gun violence and mass shootings, which is to say many of us will continue to be outraged, and in response we will continually hear about the bravery of, quote, most cops who are charged with a, quote, difficult job. Sadly, I fear not that much will change. All right. And Michael says, what about the other police officers, the ones that file false reports corroborating a shooting which they did not witness in order to back up their colleague? I have never seen a follow-up news story on this angle. Aren't they complicit as well? And George says, New York state law authorized SUNY to hire and control SUNY campus police officers. They are not New York state police. As to arming campus police, they may be the first responders to serious crimes on and off campus. If municipal police need to be armed, why a different standard for campus PD? Train them up, not arm them down. Why is it only one data point? Remember Virginia Tech? Okay.
All right. And we're gonna check on the state police, because I do believe that there is a state police presence.
Well,
on the,
but that
on the
doesn't
campus.
Mean that they're not allowed to come on the campus.
No, but I mean, yes. When you see the vehicles, yeah. That they are state police vehicles.
Well, that's interesting. You know, you have this very well.
Not all of them, by the way. There's university at Albany police, but then there's campus, and there are quite a few parked over there. But anyway, go ahead.
Which is interesting, because you have this this very special place fostered by the governor with Elaine Calieros, the president, and doing some significant work. And one might think that there might be a sense that they need extra protection because of the sensitivity of what they're doing, Joe. Maybe. I'm just...
I'm
sort of guessing about that. And then Ruth says, why don't police understand that it is okay for a suspect of a minor infraction such as a traffic violation to get away? They can be pursued and caught later in a non-lethal way.
And that's what the district attorney said in this case. He should just let him go.
And Elaine says, just for some perspective, people disappear and are murdered here with impunity. And she's checking in from Mexico, by the way. Often cases are not even tried. At least we have scrutiny in the U.S. and are trying to resolve the problem. That's what she says. And I guess, Joe, that's sort of it.
Sort of it, we will go with. So let us move on to other topics. And we'll go to other big issues here making news this morning. That would be, I wanted to talk about the upcoming Republican presidential debate that will be covered on the Fox News Network. I find this fascinating. I don't think we've talked about it a whole lot. This is next week. It will be in Cleveland. It marks not only the inaugural former gathering of the expansive GOP field, but also the start of a new and unpredictable chapter in an already raucous 2016 race. So it's August 6th, and what Donald Trump will be in the debate, so that's interesting in and of itself. But then now there are nine other participants who will be in it, who are now jockeying for position to be deemed relevant to be part of the debate. And with such splintering among 17 announced candidates, how do you pick those 10 who are going to be in the debate?
And who's not going to make it? And what are they going to say?
And some of these people. Now here's Trump polling at a huge 18%. I say that with tongue in cheek, because 18% is 18%.
A lot of 17 candidates.
Right. But some of the people who are making this 10 are coming in at 2% or 1.5%. And here's Fox basically making the decision as to who can be heard. And the ones that can't be heard, tough noogies on them. That means that they may never get to be president of the United States because Fox has deemed them
they can't get
unworthy.
And George Pataki may well be one of those who do not make the cut.
Because that would be terrible.
Because he's not high enough in the rankings right now in the polls.
Okay, so we assume...
Is he anywhere in the polls?
I don't think he's got
no,
much
no,
of...
No, no, okay.
Yeah, but are
trying.
They,
but
what about the? I mean,
yeah, no go. Please,
no, I just mean the others too. I mean, is anybody really doing that? With it being so splintered.
Yes.
I don't. You know.
Yeah.
There, you're getting 2% versus 3%. Does that really where the cutoff is?
And we are 16 months out still.
Right. And they're all doing well, not the election, but many of them are taking desperate measures. You had Ted Cruz sort of take on the leadership of the U.S. Senate and call the majority leader a liar. And you had Mike Huckabee make the allusion,
the oven comment,
the so-called oven comment, right? And that got them some attention. And the idea is to get some attention now so that people know who you are, because it's going to help because there's so many in the race.
So Chris Christie, Mike Huckabee, Rand Paul, Scott Walker, Donald Trump, Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, Ben Carson, Rick Perry. Those are the ones.
The 10.
Who are expected. This is not finalized.
Right.
This
it could all change if they get their name in the news and get their numbers up. That's why they're doing it.
So that would mean that Kasich, Santorum, Jindal, Fiorina, Pataki, and Graham are all out of that debate.
That's right. That would be a very interesting debate, those six.
Well, I was thinking about this. If you're one of them, what do you want to do? You have to do something. So you create another event. You say, okay, this is disgraceful on the part of Fox. Now we're going to have our own event, even if you have to pay for it. You get it going and you set it up. Yeah. And you only have six as opposed to 10, and maybe you even get a little bit more airtime.
And one is not Donald Trump, so there actually might be a chance for...
Is this the framing of a television show? Why isn't it 12 instead of 10?
It sounds like a reality show.
And by the way, 10
the
is
biggest
ridiculous.
Losers.
It's
I don't know.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, it's a lot of people.
Well,
to
17
have any...
is ridiculous. Yeah. But I mean, what are you going to get out of? We can't even get substance out of the 90-minute debates, presidential debates that we have with two candidates.
This will be 6 hours.
Right. So you put 17 people, and one of them being Donald Trump. What are you going to get out of that?
Yeah. It is like a summer reality series. Exactly. I mean, and that's not my characterization, but I embrace that one.
Will they give out red roses?
That's right. I saw Donald Trump on CNN last night, and they asked him what he's going to do to prepare, and he's going to go to a golf tournament in the UK. He's wanted to go for a long time, a women's golf tournament, and the others are going to lock themselves into rooms and prepare. But, I'm just going to be me. I'm just going to show up and be me. I don't think there's any question that he'll be him.
That's great.
We're all painfully aware of that. Mm-hmm. Let's take a break. By the way, we just want to mention the debate. It will be on Fox on August 6th, and then the next debate after that will be on CNN in September.
And how are they choosing?
Well, they have their own rules, and they're going to be doing. Although they have set pretty similar rules, that there will be a vetting. And the way Fox is doing it, or the way at least that it's announced, is they're going to be doing looking at, was it 8 or 9 national polls, mm-hmm. and then taking the top the aggregate of the top 10.
Interesting. I hear that your newspaper, Mike, is sending somebody up to cover Pataki.
Right. We want to. I mean, he's a former three-term New York governor. He's going to be in New Hampshire next week. So Casey Seiler, our state editor, is going to tag along and watch him campaign and see what see who's out there supporting him, and who he's speaking to, and kind of get their reaction. It's our piece of this 17 plus member race here, and I think it'll be interesting to New Yorkers just to see what he's thinking about the strategy. Well, I mean, the cynical among us say, well, he's one of those who don't even qualify for the Fox debate, but
bubble, as the Washington Post put it.
All subject to change when things shift, and there could be seismic shifts
let's just assume for a second
that
your newspaper decides our New York guy needs to have some coverage. Just that decision, right? I'm not trying to give you a hard time here, but just that decision.
You don't think it's appropriate for a capital city newspaper to track a former three-term governor, a governor that defeated Mario Cuomo and had has today an enormous impact by the legislation he passed and the things that he did on New Yorkers?
I see a point.
It's a legitimate question, and that's our role.
You got to cover your hometown guy.
That's right.
I mean, he is, in essence, an Albany figure, and yeah, you know.
Now, you guys are just like the cops.
He's a Peekskill guy, too, and I'm sure if there were still a Peekskill paper, they would cover him, too, but there isn't.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be back. We'll continue our discussion, and we'll include your letters as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the office of Dr. Vivian Letizia, Woodstock, orthodontic, cosmetic, and general dentistry serving the Hudson Valley since 1986. WoodstockDentist.com. Autobahn Service, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, offering service, repair, and diagnosis of imports, specializing in late model Volkswagen, Audi, and BMW. AutobahnTechnic.com. Chester Theater, presenting Memory House, a play about mothers and daughters, starring Deborah Jo Rupp, July 29th through August 9th. ChesterTheater.org for tickets. And KW Home, East Hampton, Massachusetts, offering home furnishings and interior design services, featuring furniture, rugs, lighting, and window treatments. KWHome.net.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable discussion this morning. Mike Spain is here, Alan Chartok, Stu Shinsky, and we welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. And let us move on to other... Well, we have a few letters. Let's go to the letters. We have many letters on police.
So. We do. Good morning. When I was a student at the University of Albany, 2001 to 2005, I remember the campus police being dressed in the same attire as New York State Police, with the purple ties and all, but in university police cars. I live in Poughkeepsie now, where Marist and Vassar colleges have their own unarmed security forces. Perhaps state police are used at larger schools. UA is like a small city, whereas Marist and Vassar are only a few thousand students. All right, thank you for that. And Rich says, Mike Spain, there is a paper that covers Peekskill. The Journal News Pataki is covered. C-L-O-H-U-D online. Okay.
Fair enough.
You did say a daily newspaper.
I do want to say, well, Lohud.
Lohud is a daily newspaper.
But I say it with some level of affection because I was once the city editor and the city hall reporter in Peekskill. But that was during the 1970s when there was a Peekskill Evening Star that became a Peekskill Star when it went mornings.
Okay.
Now part of the Lohud.
And so right. we heard from yet another critic whose name is Spirit Walk, who says, on the round table, watching, listening, your mics pick up the sound tapping of the keyboard, specifically Alan's. It's distracting. Okay, fair enough. Okay, all right. And Wesley says, I believe New York State Police vehicles may be parked on the SUNY Albany campus as overflow parking, since the New York State Police Academy campus abuts the university grant.
That's not what I mean.
Joe said, no. And Julia says, the SUNY Nanotech campus is principally a commercial enterprise funded in part by major semiconductor and equipment manufacturing companies. Yes, it is also an educational institution, but unlike other SUNY campuses, its mission is the support of the semiconductor tech industry, so one would expect security and police presence to be more in line with an industrial setting. Anybody wants to say anything at any point, please just come right in.
No, I agree with that statement.
Okay. Margaret says, the 1960 award-winning film The Making of the President was true drama and offered insight. Today, 16 months out, it's a disgrace. The Republicans are in a funk, says Margaret. And Grace says, it is my belief that unwanted shootings by police have been going on since the creation of the drug trade. The war on drugs has pitted the police and blacks as enemies. The new usage of cameras is the reason that this has come to our attention. There are several premises in that letter I don't agree with, but those are that's your voice. Angelina says, It is their power that corrupts racists or not. The problem of cops and racist cops are two separate issues. That's what she says. And that's it for now.
All right. So let's move on to other issues in the news that we can discuss this morning. Mike, what do you have on your plate?
Well, we were talking today about the prospect of increasing the use of bicycles in the capital region. Specifically in the city of Albany, there's a plan to realign the very busy Madison Avenue, and there was a hearing last night to talk about it. But this would be a prototype for what could be an expanding use of bicycles throughout the region. The Capital Region Transportation Committee recently sought proposals from vendors to have a city bike type system in various places in Albany, Schenectady, and Troy, and perhaps Saratoga. And the idea is to encourage more bikes. Other big cities do it. They have bike shares all across the country. Some cities promote citizens using bikes to get back and forth to work for more than just recreation. It's green,
it's healthy, exercise.
It's good exercise, and it cuts down on the number of motor vehicles on the road. But it takes steps, and that's what the hearing last night that was held at the College of St. Rose, which is along Madison Avenue in Albany and would be part of this prototype area, where there's a discussion about putting in protected bike lanes or having just stripes on the road designating that these are for bicycles.
How would you protect a bike lane?
It's buffers. It's little walls or concrete walls or some other, maybe they're plastic in some cases. They have them in neighborhoods in New York City. It's cut down on accidents a great deal. There's a lot of traffic in New York City, obviously. And this is why they're looking at Madison Avenue, because it is a heavily trafficked road and they want to narrow it. They want to put it on a diet. That's the term being used to limit the number of cars that go on it, so it's not as busy a highway. Mm-hmm. But in the process, the proponents of the bikes are seizing the opportunity. Kathy Sheehan, the mayor of Albany, was at the hearing. She said, you know, we want to do this right. We need to consider everything. If you do put the permanent barriers in, you have to get special equipment to do snow plowing, and it creates more maintenance. And some are worried about the cost of that. And then what happens if it isn't working out? Do you continue to support and maintain it, or do you take them out? Others say that just putting stripes on the road, they wear out. What it really needs to be is a broad education program, so that the motorists know what their rights are and what the rights of the bicyclists are, and then the bicyclists have to be safe and adhere to it, and they have to watch out for pedestrians. It's a major shift. It doesn't really happen around here like it happens in a lot of communities. So that's the topic.
Well, we have something here that I think should figure into the whole discussion. Mm-hmm. It's called winter.
Winter. Interesting. There are people that continue to take bikes. And there's people who can't afford cars, and they do take bikes during the winter. It's a mode of transportation. You start to do the aerobic.
You put spikes on the wheels.
Well, it would require maintaining these routes so that bikes would be safe in the winter.
I see.
Yeah. It does snow in New York City occasionally.
That's right. And certainly it's working in New York. Mm-hmm. And as always, a main means of transportation other times of the year, but in the winter, certainly an alternative. If you can't get from point A to point B and you can't get the cab, that bike looks pretty good.
You know, Joe, you're absolutely right. And I have to say that ride down from Greenwich every morning on a bicycle might be very interesting.
You'll have to leave yesterday at 2 p.m.
Wear mittens, Joe.
I'm all good. Saratoga, right? Saratoga is looking into it as well?
Well, you have two things. You have efforts to encourage citizens using their own bikes, and then you have the movement that New York City or Denver or other big cities have, and the bike share program, which they did an experiment last summer. Buffalo has it, and they brought in the Buffalo team to let people try it out, and based on that, the Transportation Committee is looking for proposals. They don't have specific bids that they've identified an exact plan. They want to hear from vendors who want to come in and offer this as a recreational or a functional system. Some people take the city bikes to work, and then they take them home at the end of the day. It's great. It works in New York City.
Well, how does that work? You take a bike. You take a city bike.
It's in a dock, and you use your credit card. You're a member. It all goes against your credit card.
You release
the bike, and you take it to another dock that's right near where you want to go, and you dock it up. And then later in the day, you come out, and there's another...
What if there are no more bikes there?
The city actually, this is an issue in New York City. There's actually a program where they take trucks and go around and even it out and make sure that there's bikes where they need to be. It's a big system.
Yeah, and they also have, with your technology, with an app, will tell you what bike...
The next place you can go around the corner
to find where the bikes are.
And if you pay for it, you can reserve the bike.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Oh. I mean, technology is our friend.
Yes, in this case.
We're not.
Then we're going to need bike video camera cams.
All I know is that I rode a bike a number of years ago, and I didn't inflate the tires, and I didn't wear a helmet, and I fell off the bike, and I broke a lot of bones. So I haven't been riding a bike since that time.
How many years ago was that?
Well, you remember it, don't you, Joe?
You've been here forever.
Yeah,
I don't remember you being broken bones.
Oh yeah, a lot of bones.
Really,
a lot of bones. My shoulder still has a big crease in it. You know, and my mistake was, by the way, that I heard a car behind me. I was going very quickly in order to keep my heartbeat up. And I heard a car behind me, and I made the classic, I have now found out, biker's mistake. I looked over my shoulder, and then when I was going down the hill, I noticed that the front wheel was wobbling all over the place, and I knew I was cooked.
Mm. Well, bike safety and education and training and adherence to rules would be fundamental to any system that would work.
Right.
You know,
including inflating the tires.
You would need to keep Alan off the streets of Albany,
including
is what we're hearing this
keeping
morning.
Keeping dangerous people off the streets and off to the two wheels and protected.
Stay in the Prius, Dr. Chartok. Stay in the Prius.
It's true.
All right. Time for one more story. And
Rolling Stone is the one I call.
Okay.
My,
good. Yeah. So let's thank you. I do take requests. Thank you. Three former members of the Phi Kappa Psi fraternity at the University of Virginia filed a lawsuit against Rolling Stone magazine on Wednesday for defamation and infliction of emotional distress, saying the magazine's discredited article on a campus gang rape had a devastating effect on their reputations.
Yeah.
What took so long?
Well, without being judge and jury, it would seem to me that an article that would say that...
That was so incorrect.
The magazine retracted it was so bad.
That it would have a somewhat devastating effect on an individual.
Well, what they have to prove here is that it caused them sufficient reputation, you know, their reputation
was
hurt.
Closed? Wasn't the...
At the time, the University of Virginia shut down the fraternity.
Yeah, that would do it.
Members of the fraternity were all discredited as having been part of this system, the party system, where this woman described in detail, whose name was, shielded in the magazine article, where she was said she was raped there. And then later on, the story was completely discredited. And the magazine apologized, and they said there wasn't good quality control, and it essentially admitted they blew it.
It wasn't even that it was discredited. It was discredited by the Columbia School of Journalism, which was hired by Rolling Stone. So they, in essence, the people who paid them, they did their report. They said, you guys really blew this. And I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but the managing editor, I believe, resigned yesterday.
I was just going to say, Will Dana, the managing editor, will be leaving. And his last day is August 7th. And they're not linking the two, but... my guess would be there is...
One would think there's some cause and effect.
Well, and there was another angle where when this whole thing blew up, there was questions to Rolling Stone saying, well, is anyone going to be disciplined? And they said, no, we're going to move forward.
They kind of dug their heels in and said no. But
remember when they just covered Huey Lewis?
Right.
And the news.
That's right. And the news.
Huey Lewis and the news.
But not that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes.
All right. Let's. We're out of time. But
no.
I'm sorry. Do you have a letter?
And I see in the next studio you have visitors from Uzbekistan.
Uzbekistan. I'm going to be talking to them, and we're going to have a lot of fun. Looked like a good group.
Emails from Mexico, visitors from Uzbekistan. Boy, we're worldwide.
This is Ian, Uzbekistan.
Uzbekistan, thank you. And the Bronx, too.
And on that note, I bid you all adieu this morning.
Adieu.
Thanks for tuning in, people.
Well, our international edition of the Roundtable will continue after this short break.